Broadcasting from Youngstown, Ohio, this is the MV Red Podcast, the show where we talk about news and politics impacting the Mahoning Valley, the state of Ohio, and the USA. If you want to subscribe to our podcast, find us on your favorite podcast streaming app or visit our website, www.mvred.com. If you want to share your opinion with us, please email info@mvred.com, as we would love to hear from you. Now, let's get things started. Here are your hosts, Michael Metzinger and Dane Davis.
Hello, everyone, and welcome to episode number 5 of the MV Red Podcast. This is Michael Metzinger, and joining me is the great and incomparable Dane Davis. Dane, how are you doing today?
Hey, Michael. I'm feeling pretty comfy. It's fall out. It's almost Halloween. The weather's pretty nice. And I'm excited to do another episode of this podcast that I forgot existed. Episode 5. So this is like the Return of the Jedi, or no, wait, the Empire Strikes Back at the podcast.
I know my brother Tom will get that reference.
Yeah, he's a Star Wars space cadet guy, so he'll be into that.
I hear is there another one coming out in December?
Yeah, the Star Wars movies, the new ones aren't that good. The prequels were the purest expression of Star Wars, but the new ones aren't good. Let's just pretend like they don't exist and move along because they're bad.
So what's your favorite Star Wars episode then?
That's interesting. I like Return of the Jedi. I think Return of the Jedi had the greatest drama at the end. And I like the Ewoks. I thought it was a good movie, and the Emperor was a really compelling character. So Return of the Jedi for me.
So are the Ewoks those little furry bear-looking things?
Yes. I think that's very rude to refer them as bear-looking. They have boys and girls, or men and women Ewoks. And they do have their own civilization on the moon of Endor. So they're pretty advanced. I wouldn't just say they're little bear looking things. A bear can kill a fort in or at least in the Stone Age, I don't think bears can even use tools. So yeah, please be a little more sensitive to the
Ewoks. I was gonna say, pardon my ignorance, I should have done my research on Ewoks. I've always been a big fan of them, and whenever I'd mention them to my brother, I would always call them the furry bear looking things.
That's very rude. I have to censor that out of this podcast.
I'll make a note of that. So on today's episode, I think it's been about 4 or 5 weeks since our last episode. A lot has happened over that stretch, which has been this week or so of September and then most of October. We're going to talk a lot today. At least I'd like to talk a lot about Congressman Tim Ryan. He finally saw the writing on the wall and backed out or dropped out of the race. I believe it was last Thursday, which would have been, I think, the 23rd. So I want to go in kind of great depth about Congressman Ryan, his presidential run, and where he's going to go from here. And then I want to talk briefly, we'll kind of give you an update on where we think the Democrats are, and so we'll update our power rankings. I know on my side, I have a new front runner. It seems like every episode I have a new front runner, but overall, my top 4 or 5 is pretty much relatively unchanged. Just the order of it has changed a little bit. Then, being that we're about a year out from the 2020 elections, we'll talk a little bit about that, how we see the race shaping up, and then lastly, a special request from one of our listeners. They want us to talk a little bit about LeBron James, China, and the NBA. So we'll throw that in there as well towards the tail end of this episode. Anything else you want to add, Dane, before we get started?
A lot. Let's get started. That's a lot to cover, man. This is like – these are – yeah, well, the Star Wars movies will be done by the time we finish this podcast, man.
Could be a long one. Buckle up.
Yeah, let's do it.
All right, so let's talk about Ohio Congressman. I believe it's the 13th district. I thought I did some research on this. I think it's the 13th congressional district. Congressman Tim Ryan, he's been the congressman here since, I believe it's been 2002. Does that sound about right to you?
I'd say the 2002 election. I think.
Yeah, I think that's when Traficant. It was right around the time Bush took over, when Traficant was going through his legal issues. So that's when Tim Ryan took over. So he's been congressman here in mainly the Youngstown Warren region. And then in the last, what, eight or nine years ago, when the districts were redrawn, it changed. So part of Mahoning County was split up between Tim Ryan and Bill Johnson. And then Tim Ryan's district now carries over toward Akron. So he not only has Youngstown and Warren, he also has the city of Akron. So he's been congressman 17 years now. And he decided this in 2019 here to take a shot at the Democratic nomination for president. He saw, I think – here's how I'm going to interpret this. He saw an opening. He saw there was an opportunity where the Democrats seemed to abandon their base, especially in the Midwest, and he thought he had the opportunity to be that voice for middle America, those Democrats, those blue-collar Democrats that Donald Trump won over in a big way in 2016. And so he saw this opportunity and he decided to run. So are you agree with me thus far with maybe my analysis?
I'm going to disagree a bit, but keep going if you had more to say. I actually, if that were the case, like that's what people say and that's what makes logical sense. If that's the case, and I think that kind of makes sense, he deployed the worst strategy for that type of campaign. In human history, he made so many mistakes. But I want to let you finish your point before I go into that.
Well, I just kind of wanted to give some background in case we do have some people outside of our area, which is Northeast Ohio, from tuning in. Most of my other comments and discussion I want to have are in regards to his actual presidential campaign. So if you want to start out with just kind of responding to my initial thoughts on why he ran for president.
Well, look, I think you're right in the sense that there was an opening for like a moderate blue collar guy that could reconnect with the so-called Rust Belt area that the Democrats used to control but lost, namely Ohio, Pennsylvania, Michigan, and Wisconsin, and pretty close to Minnesota. Minnesota was like 1.5% away from
Yeah, very close.
So there was this clear opening, right? And Tim Ryan on paper made sense to fill that opening. He was the longtime congressman for the downtown area, covering Youngstown and Akron and Warren. Notably, started out as kind of like a moderate Democrat, was a pro-life, pro-Second Amendment Democrat, but was on the left on the economic issues, was a big critic of Bush, kind of made a name for himself. Over time, he drifted further and further to the left, but he could have worked, right? Like the idea of Tim Ryan worked. I buy that. But Tim Ryan, the person, is just a total failure and almost a tragedy if he weren't so incompetent of a political campaign. I mean, do you want me to start the Tim Ryan rant? Or do you
Yes, go for it.
So again, Tim Ryan on paper had a huge opportunity. I really do think that a moderate Democrat who is more of a social conservative but more left-wing on economic issues could do exceptionally well. I don't know if they'd be able to win the primary, but they could certainly win a general election, right? I think that's where the median American is. And there's some polling data that suggests that the median American is a social conservative but an economic leftist, right?
Mm-hmm.
A total 180 from the average white-collar American who's a social liberal but an economic conservative. So Tim Ryan could have done this, but what does he do? You have GM shutting down the Lordstown, which is right in his backyard, and he starts his campaign with the most epic blunder I've ever seen in my life. He starts his campaign on The View. The View, right? Who watches The View? Illiterate, you know, I wouldn't even salt stay-at-home moms by saying they watch The View. Stay-at-home moms are far too busy to waste their time watching The View. Like, The View, I think that, like, 5% of the population of The View is registered to vote. And of that 5%, I'd say, like, less than 10% actually decides to vote on any given election. And they'll usually probably vote for whoever's the most attractive, right?
Mm-hmm.
Back and forth. Like, The View demographic does not line up with the blue-collar demographic. But Tim Ryan starts his campaign on The View, completely ignores Lordstown. Right? Like, imagine this. He announces in front of Lordstown, Ohio, the Shutter GM facility, and he says, look, for too long, you know, D.C.'s forgotten the Lordstowns of the world. Our president was announced to fix this area, and look, Lordstown shut it down. I won't forget. I'm going to fight. Boom. You know, what a great start to a campaign. But he didn't do that. He started on the fucking View. Pardon my language. He started on the View of all places, okay? And he ran this campaign that was one half New Age spiritualists, right? And the other half, like, oh, I stand up for the blue-collar workers, but never focused on any of their issues or that. And it was just discordant, tone-deaf, and a total failure. Now, fun fact about Dane Davis, I went to his launch rally in downtown Youngstown. I think it was on a Saturday morning, and I went. I have a Tim Ryan t-shirt, which is very soft.
I was going to ask, do you still have the t-shirt?
I still have the t-shirt, yeah. So I went there, not because I wanted to support him, but just because I was curious. And he totally squandered his opportunity. And I'll conclude by saying this. Tim Ryan is the classic VP candidate, right? Like, him running for president makes sense to bring out name recognition. He fails, but he becomes the VP choice, right? But his campaign was so poorly run, and he stumbled, and he just was a total no-name, and he got destroyed by Tulsi Gabbard, that his chances of becoming VP actually lessened after that campaign instead of increase. And I just think Tim Ryan is such a joke of a politician that if I were a Democrat, I would be utterly ashamed that he was carrying my party's nomination. Because it's one thing to be evil. It's one thing to be maniacal. It's one thing to be devious. But the worst sin in politics is to be an incompetent boob. And that defines Tim Ryan to the core. So I'll let you take over.
Well, you uttered a lot of my thoughts. I thought he made a lot of blunders. And let's take a step back here. While this was occurring, when did he actually announce his run?
I think it was in April, because I assume it was springtime, I think.
Okay, I mean, that sounds about right. I thought it was during maybe March or April. So he announces this campaign right, what, two or three months after it's kind of confirmed that GM Lordstown is closing down.
Yeah.
And I think you were spot on with this could have been a huge opportunity for him in this part of the country to draw attention to, you know, let's say what needs to be said. I mean, Donald Trump went to, was it the Covelli Center, where he said, you know, keep your jobs here. He could have had a whole focus on Lordstown, keeping your jobs, how you know, whoever want to blame, whatever. It's not Trump's fault that GM Lordstown's leaving. But again, people will buy into little basic things like that. So I thought he made some strategic errors there. And it was just such a poorly run campaign. Now, I'll go back to something I mentioned in a previous podcast. I thought, to me, his name recognition was lacking. Obviously, here in Northeast Ohio, we know who he is. And maybe across the state of Ohio, he has a lot of traction. But I still felt that he should have ran statewide for something. I know you didn't quite agree with me maybe on that, but I think he needed to take that step statewide, get the name recognition, win it in a state that's trending red before running for president. Secondly, agree wholeheartedly with you about him as a vice presidential candidate. I think that's out the door. I mean, there's I don't see how there's any opportunity for him to be a viable vice presidential candidate in 2020 for, you know, let's say it's Elizabeth Warren or Bernie Sanders or some, you know, far leftist on the ticket who wants to get maybe a more moderate presence from the Midwest or the Rust Belt on the ticket. One would have thought Tim Ryan would have been the perfect guy, but after this campaign and especially after that debate where Tulsi Gabbard just single-handedly destroyed him in a matter of just a couple minutes, I think he did a lot of damage to him, his future aspirations, whether they are for him maybe to run for president again one day or hopefully if he's trying to eyeball finding a way to get a vice presidential slot. I just think all that's went out the water. So I thought it was poorly run campaign. My biggest criticism of him was how he just he kept running for so long, and I'm thinking to myself, you don't have any money. You're not registering anything in the polls, and he'd talk about this thing. I have a path. What is your path? I mean, what Kool-Aid are you drinking here, buddy?
Yeah. So I think that, Mayor Pete Buttigieg, I think I learned how to pronounce his name correctly. But
I agree. You're right on that.
Mayor Pete is just a mayor. He's never – He will never occupy statewide office, but he was suave enough and intelligent enough. And I don't like Mayor Pete, but I got to give him credit. He's clearly an intelligent guy, and he's been able to do well in the polls and kind of make a name for himself. Tim Ryan, I agree. Would it have bolstered his resume had he run for an Ohio position? Yes, 100%. He'd be a much better strategic position. But was it necessary to have a statewide office to run for president? I don't think it was necessary. I think if he were of such charisma and charm, and clearly the Democrats have a need for a Tim Ryan-like candidate, he could have done it. He really could have done it. But he's such a fool. And here's what interests me about Tim Ryan is he has squandered opportunity after opportunity. And whoever is advising him is a horrible advisor because he's continually miscalculated and – he's had openings where he could have become a senator in Ohio. He could have become a governor, especially I think in 2008 to 2012, like that era. He could have challenged John Kasich. Like he could have really built his brand and reputation, but he hasn't. And he ran for president instead and ran a pretty poor campaign. I do have one more point I want to make about Tim Ryan is I think that if you look at his donation list, the people donate to his campaign are all mayors, particularly local mayors. And I think that one of the things he was doing, and I don't want to imply criminal malfeasance, but I think he was using his presidential campaign as a way to buy the support or an avenue for local mayors to support him. And in return, he would funnel grants and local money to them. So I think that there was I think there were some shady things going on in the background. I'm not saying that it was illegal, but I think that he was using it as a way to buy influence or open it up for influence peddling. And again, I'm not trying to say that this is criminal influence peddling, but I just think that, he was running and he's like, well, hey, look, mayor of wherever, Strongsville, you want a grant? Well, did you donate to my presidential campaign? Oh, you did. Okay, you get the grant, right? Or I'm going to put if that makes sense.
So after he dropped out last week, Donald Trump was quick in typical Trump fashion to take some shots at him. So he tweeted this. So Congressman Tim Ryan of Ohio has finally dropped out of the race for president, registering zero in the polls and unable to even qualify for the debate stage. See, Tim, it's not so easy out there if you don't know what you're doing. He wasn't effective for USA workers. Just talk. And the part of this tweet I like the most is those last two words, just talk. I think he talks a very good game. We even talked about it on other episodes of this podcast in the two debates that he did qualify for. I think he did qualify for two. He was saying a lot of the right things. Yes, he got destroyed by Tulsi Gabbard in the one debate, but a lot of what he was saying to me resonated with Middle America, Rust Belt. Check all those boxes. But his actions speak louder than words. His voting record speaks louder than words. He was trying to come across as this maybe more moderate. And I would read some articles saying he's like a moderate Democrat. I'm thinking to myself, have you seen his voting record? He's not a moderate Democrat. He's evolved on all these issues. As a Roman Catholic, now he's like wholeheartedly in favor of abortion, or you're 100% pro-choice. He's evolved 100% on that particular issue. He talks a very good game, and I guess that leads me to my next point, though. Now he's running for Congress once again. Do we ever see a candidate locally who could unseat him? That's the only issue. I listen to talk radio. I listen to 570, where, by the way, he never goes on either Dan Rivers or Ron Verbs programs. But you hear caller after caller say nothing positive about this guy. He obviously has some voters out there that like him, but I just don't get it. What are your thoughts on that?
So if you look at his share of the vote, his share has been declining over time. I think it spiked in 2010, but there was a three-way race, so it was kind of anomalous. But most recently, he got 61% to 39% for Chris DiPizzo, and that looks like a clear majority, 61%. But if you go back a couple election cycles, he was getting 70 to 80%, right? So The area is clearly trending redder. This is something we talked about a lot in past episodes. I think that the big risk to Tim Ryan is his district gets redistricted out of existence. So consider this, right? Ohio currently has 18 electoral votes. Two senators and 16 congressmen or representatives. Ohio is likely going to go down to 17 electoral votes, two senators and 15 congressmen and women. Currently, the Ohio delegation of those 16 representatives are 12 Republicans and 4 Democrats. Two Democrats in Cleveland, one Democrat, I think, in downtown Columbus, and one Democrat in Tim Ryan's area. Tim Ryan's district is currently constructed. It'll probably be another 10, 20 years before it turns red. But since the area has been getting redder, if the Republicans were smart, I think that they could re-engineer it whereby they keep 12 representatives and the Democrats are down to 3. So Tim Ryan's district, I think if you did the math right, you could easily make it, you could district it out of existence. So I think Tim Ryan sees the writing on the wall, and he knows he's going to be districted out of existence soon. I think he's likely very, very vulnerable. I don't think the Republicans will let a Republican district go. And I think he's going to be in for a much more competitive race going forward. So I think he knows this. I think he tried to make a name for himself nationally as a Hail Mary pass. It didn't work out well, and I think he's thinking to himself, well, crap, what do I do next?
Mm-hmm. And you are right. I've read some different things about the upcoming census, and there, I think, are a couple other states that would be more likely to lose seats before Ohio. But if Ohio's population remains as stagnant as it is, I think they were maybe the fourth or fifth most likely state to lose seats. I think Illinois, New York, maybe Michigan and Minnesota were ahead of them, or maybe in Pennsylvania, something like that. But I remember New York was definitely on there. So it'll be interesting to see if Ohio ends up losing one once we do get the 2020 census completed. And you are correct. Another interesting thing about this district, as I'm looking at it on one of my favorite websites, Wikipedia. So this, yes, I got to watch what I say because, a lot of people absolutely hate Wikipedia. But, everything I'm reading here has some footnotes. So in 2014, Kasich won the district, based on a statewide race. But in terms of the congressional district, it went to Kasich. Hillary Clinton only won this district by 6 points. And in the same election back in 2016, Rob Portman did win it by 2. So this isn't the district of the past or one of the ones of the past where Tim Ryan had a district which was going 60 to 65% Democrat. This is a much more competitive district, and we shall see if it ends up going away in the next cycle. One thing I would like to see, and I was tossing this off one of my coworkers the other day in terms of these congressional districts, if you want to make it maybe a more reasonable district, especially because I think in Ohio there's going to be a committee that was voted on to create the districts, you could in theory include the city of Youngstown and the rest of Mahoning County and Bill Johnson district and maybe cut off some of the Republican part. And I think it would still be a pretty fairly reliable Republican district just because of how red it's become. So you could in theory make all of Mahoning County part of Bill Johnson's district, have all of Trumbull and maybe points north and west, or north and then points west, Tim Ryan's, and that necessarily isn't as blue as it once was either.
Yeah.
And I think those could both become, I wouldn't be surprised if in 4 or 5 years, if these districts are redrawn, if two Republicans are representing this area, if it's drawn a certain way.
Yes, easily. I think you take Youngstown, you loop it in Bill Johnson's district. It makes it a little bit bluer, but not that much. you take Warren, maybe you put that in Bill Johnson's district, or you take Warren in Akron and put it in David Joyce's district, which is my district. You have a very red Geauga County. You have an increasingly red Ashtabula County. It's amazing the strides Republicans have made in Ashtabula County. And then Portage is pretty red. Trumbull County, ex-Warren, is getting redder. And you've got two red districts. So, again, I think to wrap up Tim Ryan, he knows clock is ticking. He made a Hail Mary pass. He's not very good at politics, and he failed.
Mm-hmm. I don't disagree with you there. He'll win in 2020. I think this is going to be a very fascinating election to watch, especially depending on what happens at the presidential level. But let's say Trump is successful and does get reelected and does continue to do well in this part of the state of Ohio, which has trended more red, where other parts, especially like around Columbus, has trended more blue. I'm real curious to see how his share of the vote is in 2020. Does it continue to subside, or does he level it off? But if it continues to subside, let's say his district does stay around, it's going to point to issues down the road. There's going to come a time when there's going to be a viable candidate to run against him. I'm not sure who that would be. It's almost as if you would need somebody like a Michael Rooley. Obviously, he's in Bill Johnson's district, but somebody with that name recognition, a lot of respect. Maybe not ultra partisan, but people are well known. Somebody who's well known throughout the community, who's a Republican, well respected, to take him down. At this time, it just seems like some random people have run against him. I know DePizzo ran. I thought he did a lot. He even got the endorsement of the Tribune Chronicle. Had a debate with him. So I think there's definitely some strides made by him. But sooner or later, let's say his district does stay around. I think it's going to come to a point where if there's a viable alternative to Ryan, that would go a long way to unseating him as congressman.
Why don't you run? You got CPA. You could do it, dude. You could do it.
Yeah, that's what my one coworker said the other day, and I'm like, not for me. As much as I'm interested in politics, I like my career. It's a steady career. I work for a good place, good firm. I like what I do. I don't know if I would like a career in politics.
I don't know, dude. I don't know. You didn't seem that reluctant. I guess we'll see. Tune into the next episode of Pony Valley Red to see what he decides to do, folks.
We shall see. So anything else you want to talk about related to Tim Ryan?
No, I can't spend more of my life on Tim Ryan. I'm done. Next topic.
Yeah, next topic. All right, so let's give everyone an update as to our power rankings for the Democrats. So the last time around I gave my rankings, I think I had Warren, and I think I had maybe Biden number one. He had a good debate performance, so I had him ahead of Elizabeth Warren, and I think I had Kamala Harris and Bernie Sanders and Mayor Pete. And then I'm not sure where you were at, but mine's changed a little bit. But I want to first hear how you see that shaping up as we've had a few more people drop out of the race.
I don't remember how I ranked them, but I still think it's between Warren and Joe Biden. And I think Elizabeth Warren is the one to beat. I think that the moderates are going to, you know, clearly there are two lanes, right? Or two factions. There's the left-wing faction split between Warren and Sanders. And then there's the centrist faction with Joe Biden currently dominating it. It's interesting. A lot of the lower tier people all went for that far left faction instead of trying to take out a moderate position. Nobody from that second tier has really been able to break out. Kamala Harris quickly did, then faded. So I think it's Elizabeth Warren, and it's between Elizabeth Warren and Joe Biden. And I think Elizabeth Warren is going to take it. I think that she is clearly intelligent. She's clearly motivated. She's got a growing base. And with Bernie Sanders recently having a heart attack, which, you know, it's unfortunate to see anybody have health problems, but I just don't know how much he can physically endure in the campaign. So I think she's going to be the one that's going to be hard to beat. And I think it's Elizabeth Warren's nomination to lose. I think Biden is a fragile front runner. And his poll numbers are starting to slip. And I think he's going to lose Iowa. I think he's going to lose New Hampshire. And I think he'll get first in South Carolina, but then he'll start losing after that. But I don't know. We'll see.
Mm-hmm. No, I agree with your analysis. And what's worth mentioning is there are betting markets for the real degenerates out there that like to waste their money betting different things such as politics. And since August 15th of this year, Elizabeth Warren has been the front runner. She at one point on that day, she was at 28.6% chance and Biden was at 28.1. Since then, her lead did grow at one point to at least like 32, 33, 34 points. It slipped a little bit, but she's around 45% odds of getting it, Biden at 23%. And then Mayor Pete slipping into the third spot just ahead of Bernie Sanders at 11.7%. So I think Warren's run a sound campaign. I think sooner or later her inability or her maybe her debate coaching in terms of not answering certain questions is going to come back to bite her. But I think in the long run, let's say it does become like a Warren-Biden race, I don't think that bodes well for Joe Biden. I think the more he talks, the more damage he does to his campaign. I think sometimes he might seem a little energized at the start of a debate, but when he starts getting some pointed questions and people start throwing stuff at him, he's been stumbling more and more over his words. And I think the whole impeachment thing, which I really don't really want to talk about too much today, he had an opportunity in that last debate. He had a couple of days to prepare some sort of response in regards to his son. And his response in the debate was questionable at best. And I read a lot of people on Twitter and some articles after the debate analyzing things, and they did not understand how that was Joe Biden's response. So I just think the more he talks, the more harm he does. And I get, yes, if you look at these general election polls, Biden has these big leads over Donald Trump, but I agree with you. I think he's very fragile, and I think a lot of that is the idea of Joe Biden of 4 years ago as vice president, Joe Biden of the past. This isn't the Joe Biden of the past anymore. This is a different Joe Biden, and you could tell he's aged considerably, and he would be a risky choice. So I definitely have Warren as my number one. I have Biden there. And then I Mayor Pete, he had a commendable performance in the last debate, but – I don't see a legitimate path for him. He's, you know, from the Rust Belt, mayor of South Bend, Indiana, go Notre Dame, although we just got shellacked by Michigan this past weekend. I just don't see a path. I think he's very polished. I've commended him, I think, on almost every episode thus far. I knew nothing about this guy before he ran for president, never heard of him. And then I started seeing some tweets about him, like, who is this guy? I can't even see Buttigieg or whatever his name was. He's run a nice campaign. Maybe there's a future for him. This time around, I'm not seeing it. Bernie, the heart attack, unfortunately, I think that's really going to do some major damage to his campaign. So I think his days are numbered, and I think his vote will coalesce behind Elizabeth Warren, and that'll kind of get them over that threshold to beat Biden in the delegate count in the long run.
You know, can I make a point real quick?
Yeah.
I think I largely agree with everything you said. I think one thing that's coming clear from the debates is that the Democrats have an agenda that is, in my opinion, unrealistic, completely unrealistic, right? And it's so unrealistic that I think that they're falling back upon this impeachment thing, not because they really wanted to impeach Trump, but just that they need something to energize their base. And their policy, I think that they're laying a lot of landmines, right? Like, they're saying things in the primaries that sound good to the base, that will excite the base, but come a general election, I think will play very differently. I mean, if you just go through their policies and you think of, like, what are realistically being able to achieve and do we even want that? Like, student loan forgiveness, that's never going to pass the Congress, right? The deal. That's a total joke of a policy. Getting the U.S. off of fossil fuels by 2030, not going to happen. Banning fracking, it would destroy millions. I'm not exaggerating when I say millions of jobs. And it's such a silly move. to ban fracking when the United States is the leading producer of oil and natural gas, I think, in the world, not number one, number two, thanks to fracking, would be a disastrous move for the economy. It would cause her to lose states like Ohio and Pennsylvania, and potentially Michigan as well. The illegal immigrants, we're now going to give health care to illegal immigrants. Like, is this serious policy that you're going to have to work and, you know, spend time away from your family, and some of that time is taken by the government through tax dollars, and we're going to redistribute it to people that came into this country illegally and knowingly violated the law so that they can have health care and they can have an easier standard of living than you do? They don't even pay taxes. I'm saying that they pay sales taxes, but they don't pay all the taxes that an American citizen pays. I mean, all of these policies, I think, are just going to be disastrous in the general. And I think that the smarter members of the Democratic leadership, they know that. And they know that they have enthusiasm. And yes, Trump polls poorly, and Biden's leading by 50,000 points in every state. But I really think that come 2020, the race is going to change. And I think that they know it's going to be a much tighter race because of the landmines that they're laying now.
Yeah, I think it's going to be a very tight race. There's an article I read this morning on Real Clear Politics. It was growing uncertainty looms over Dems 2020 primary. And there was a quote, obviously you can make – actually the guy's name was David Metz. I kind of liked his last name there. But he says something to the effect of nobody knows what to do. They're all afraid. There's a lot of anxiety in talking about the 2020 field about 100 days out from the Iowa caucus. I think we'll have to see what's going to happen. I do agree with you. This is going to be a very tight election. There's been a couple of other articles I read on voters in Minnesota, Wisconsin, and Michigan, where some reporters have gone to various communities that were split virtually 50-50, and goes and they talk to different people, and people really aren't changing their mind on Trump one way or the other. Either you're for him or against him. They were looking for some people, it seemed like, in some of these articles, maybe even a CNN clip I saw last week, looking for people who have left the president, and they're struggling to find those people. So I see it to be another tight election. Obviously, I think the Democrats going to have the advantage in terms of the popular vote. I don't really it's going to come down to, I think, a number of the Great Lakes states. You have to watch like a state like Arizona, maybe flipping, maybe blue, maybe Georgia. I don't know. But you got Minnesota, you got New Hampshire, you got those Rust Belt states that Trump could easily flip the other way and still be victorious. But it's going to be a tight race. Unfortunately, I think Ron Verb in recent weeks has been a little weary of some of the news, some of the polls, where Trump's at right now. I don't know if you heard him today, but he was a downer. He's one to read in these polls, and he gets very down on them, and he gets concerned. And I'm thinking to myself, I recall polls back in 2008 where McCain was beating whoever the prospective Democratic candidate was, and he ended up getting slaughtered. So it's very far out. It's going to be a tight race. It's going to come down to, I think, a number of the same states as 4 years ago. So, we shall see.
Yeah, agreed. I think that it's easy to compare hypotheticals, right? It's like, oh, I'll leave my wife and marry a super hot supermodel, and we'll. But then when you look who's out there, and you're like, oh, I don't know, actually implementing that plan is a little bit harder. And I don't want to leave Shanley. Please don't. That's not what I'm implying. I'm just saying that the real world.
Okay. So looking, I guess we kind of just talked about it a little bit. We could kind of take a little deeper dive into it. So 2020, we're about a year out from now, the 2020 elections, very exciting for us political folks that sit and watch election night coverage during the primaries and all that and get all giddy about it, and getting new political polls out every day and reading all the blogs and all that. So I'm super excited about 2020. But we're a year out now. How do you see this race shaping up? What are your initial predictions, I guess? You don't necessarily have to say who you think is going to win, but maybe see who the head-to-head is and maybe – couple states or a couple topics or issues that you think it's going to come down to?
You know, I think that the number one issue in my mind, or the number one unknown at this point, is really not who's running. I think even bigger than that, it's the state of the economy in 2020. I mean, the news media has been predicting recession after recession, and it hasn't happened. I mean, the earnings reports from major companies are doing well. Unemployment's at 3.5%. GDP growth has slowed, but it's still positive. Inflation is really low. I mean, the economy is fine, right? And there was a little bit of manufacturing weakness in the third quarter, but it seems to be recovering. Housing market's doing a lot better than it was in the middle of the year. So the economy, I think, is the biggest wild card, number one. So where's the economy? I actually think it's going to be like this year, you know, just stable. I don't think we'll have a huge recession. And, you know, hopefully for the sake of everybody listening, that, you know, I'm right, regardless of where we appear in politics. The economy's in fine. I think that, and Trump is, I think he'll do okay. I think right now I'd say he has the slightly better odds of winning. If this were any other Republican, it would be a 45 state landslide. Trump having the personal issues that takes him down. But like, I think that the suburban voters, if they get a far left candidate in there, will swing back to the Republicans, because they're going to look at their 401k, they're going to look at the unemployment, and they're going to think like, okay, do I really want to vote for a candidate who is proposing to bring back like busing, and is going to, you know, do away with zoning so they can build multifamily houses everywhere? You know, ridiculous policies like that that have come up in the debate. I think Trump's okay. I think he wins it again. I don't think he gets impeached, by the way. I think that nothing comes of that. I think that's the biggest hype of nothing, right? Like, we had two.
It's a big nothing burger. I had to use that word.
I hate that word.
I had to use it. Very Hillary Clinton-esque.
Yeah, I don't think he gets impeached. I mean, even if the House votes to impeach, I don't think that the Senate. Sorry, I don't think he gets removed from office, I should say. That's technically the issue.
Yeah.
I think he gets impeached, but I don't think he gets removed from office, right? The Senate has to convict.
Yeah.
But that's my initial take of things. I don't know what the Democratic agenda is. I really don't know what it is. I guess it's, we're going to send American men and women to serve in Syria, in an unannounced war, right? That Congress won't vote to declare war on Syria because, you know, hint, hint, we really don't know who we're fighting over there anyways, and it changes by the day. And no, Democrats are completely for that now after they were against the wars in Iraq and Afghanistan. They're for that. And then I guess their other policy is, we're going to send, you know, boys from the heartland to Syria so they can die in a desert. And then when they get back, we're going to say that you have white privilege and you need to work hard so that we can give an illegal immigrant free health care. I think that's the Democratic platform. Correct me if I'm wrong, Michael.
No, I mean, it's, a lot of that has been what they discuss in the debate. Some of the, and let me ask you this, a quick tangent here. Have you been surprised with the topics in their debates? They were like, to me, the polar opposite of the things that would be discussed in a Republican debate.
Yeah, I mean, part of that is they're Democrats, right? So the questions are going to be different. But you would think that the media would give them softballs. So they all, I mean, listen, let's be honest. We'll have a real chat moment between us and the listeners. All the Democrats have to do is run somebody that's moderate on social issues, right? And Bill Clinton policy on abortion and on the Second Amendment, and is to the left on economic issues, you know, run against Wall Street, run against big companies, you can even run for a $15 hour minimum wage. I don't think that hurts you. And they would win in a landslide, but they've gone so far to the left that it's really alienating a lot of people.
Yep, you are correct. So my thoughts, so first on the economy, you bring up a good point. It was about, I want to say 2 or 3 months ago when I would read, you know, I listen to CNBC quite a bit at work. I follow the markets pretty closely, and you would hear all the articles you'd read, and you'd hear on the news, recession, recession, recession. And how ironic, we're 3 months later, I'm not hearing it as much. I don't know if you are, but I was hearing those buzzwords, recession. They were putting it out there. The media was pushing the idea of a recession. It's kind of fizzled out. I don't know if you've noticed that as well, but I have.
because the economic data, I'll tell you why, because I follow this as a part of my job. The economic data has turned. In the second quarter and the third quarter, it got really weak when they jacked up interest rates. Really, I think it had less to do with tariffs, although I think tariffs had a negative effect. I think it was the big rapid run-up in interest rates. But the data as of Q3 and Q4, like the end of Q3, the beginning of Q4, has really – I think that's why they've shut up about it. But keep going, Michael. I didn't mean to cut you off. But yeah.
No. I was asking the question anyways. So, you know, you don't hear too much about that. So if let's say the markets are strong. I think much needs to be said about that. I think, let's see, today Dow still over 27,000. S&P, I thought, maybe set a record this week over 3,000. So if people just look first off at their 401ks, their retirement, their investment savings, they're going to see near record highs if they're not taking money out. The economy, let's say the unemployment, if it stays, even if it creeps near 4%, I mean, we're still at remarkably low levels. What's it, 3.5% right now? And it's not going to – I don't see it really dropping much further. There could only – we only have so many people that could fill these jobs. There might not be – some of these jobs reports moving forward, if they're 100,000, 150,000, I don't think that's a bad thing, because sooner or later, do we have all the people to support these jobs, at least people who want to work? I'm not real sure. So if the economy remains strong, he's going to be tough to beat, because oftentimes, as the saying goes, it's the economy stupid. But if it's super strong, people might look to secondary issues. You mentioned Syria, and I guess let me go quickly off point here. I don't really have a side on whatever Trump did in terms of pulling the troops out of where the Kurds and the Turks are on the border there. But I do find it interesting that so many Republicans and so many Democrats care about what is going on at the border of those two countries. And yet we have our own share of a ton of crap going on at our border. And, they can't come to agreement on virtually anything. So they care more about what's going on overseas at their borders and let them deal with their issues. But they want us involved. It doesn't really make much sense. So I just had to quickly throw that out there. So if the economy remains strong, I don't really know if there's a winning issue for the Democrats. There's most of these elections have been about the economy outside of what the 2004 election. That was more so about foreign policy, terrorism, and all that. But where else are we going to go? They can make it about some domestic policy and maybe injustices and all that, or health care. But I don't necessarily see that as a winning issue. So, but Trump is vulnerable. I mean, his approval ratings seem to kind of – they'll go up and down in the mid-40s. I don't think they've really eclipsed or gone above 46% ever in the Real Clear Politics average. So – he is susceptible, but I think that 45 or 46% is a pretty strong number for him, considering what he faces in the media every single day. He gets absolutely no positive coverage, so you're never going to benefit from the media coverage, as we've seen with him, the special forces killing the leader of ISIS. It's quickly turned into another issue and controversy. And, regardless of credit, people should give credit where credit's due. Like Obama and his administration and all that, they killed Osama bin Laden. That's great. It's not just great for a part, it's great for our country. That's what it should be about. Like, we killed the leader of ISIS. I mean, the world's a better place without him, but it's neither here nor there. So I don't really see necessarily a winning issue for the Democrats unless the economy struggles. And that's why I do think I think it was a little maybe premature. Obviously, you know more about economics than I do, but I did find it questionable with everyone pushing this idea of recession, when I still would look at the markets. And I'm thinking to myself, overall, I think these numbers are pretty damn strong, and I don't have too much concern, at least right now, of a recession, especially considering look at what our markets are doing in the face of a trade war with China, with these tariffs where they're at. Who would have thought we would have record highs in the stock market right now, and our unemployment rate would be at record levels for virtually every single demographic in American history? I know. sure enough, that's where we're at. So, yeah, Trump, I think, has slightly better odds. Maybe I'd put him at 55%. He's gonna be tough to beat. And the other thing you got to factor in is that advantage of the incumbent. There's not been many incumbents that have lost. I think George H.W. lost. It was a combination of, I think, him raising taxes, Ross Perot being in that race, and he seemed to be maybe a little bit out of touch with the times. Outside of that, I mean, and then who else? There's Jimmy Carter. He had his fair share of issues, but there's really not. There's controversy around the Trump administration, but I think a lot of it's media created. I don't think there's as much controversy as they make it out to be. So, yeah, we shall see.
Yeah. So I, again, it comes down to, I think that a lot of people, if you ask the average person on the street or the median person, maybe not the average, the median, and you said, hey, do you like Trump? No, he's annoying. He's braggadocious. He tweets too much. You know, I can't stand him. I would vote for anybody. I'm just so sick of him. Okay. That's the median person on the street. But then you ask them a year later in 2020, okay, you know, here's Elizabeth Warren. Here's what she wants to do for the country. You've spent a year with her, listening to her. She's been campaigning. You know her warts and all, and you know her policies, and here are the possible effects. Do you want to vote for Elizabeth Warren or Donald Trump? Okay, all of a sudden that changes. I might not like Trump, but I'm going to vote for him. Or I might not like Trump. I might not like Elizabeth Warren. I'm going to vote for neither of them, right? Think back to the Trump versus Hillary campaign. Mm-hmm. We have not seen the Republican machine, which is extremely well-funded, go into overdrive yet on any of these candidates. There's been very little negative stories coming out about them. It's just been Trump tweeting stuff and the media occasionally running the occasional hit. Right. And they're very soft because it's the media and they love Democrats because they are Democrats. So we have not seen the Republican machine turn its target on the Democrat. Let me give you an example. Hillary Clinton in 2012 or 2013 was the most popular woman in the country. She had a 67% approval rating. It was hard to find somebody more well-liked than Hillary Clinton on the media stage. She lost, right? She got destroyed. The only point, the reason I'm making this point is things change, and they change very rapidly. You should never make a judgment based on where things are now. You should make a judgment based on the first and the second derivative, right? How things will change now and how the changes that we see today will affect the changes tomorrow. So that's why I think when you take that into account, Trump, I think, does well, assuming the economy holds up. Also, this episode has been sponsored by Sweet Tarts. I'm eating Sweet Tarts from the Halloween candy jar.
Oh, boy. Casper Mattress is not going to like that.
No, sorry. The check came in the mail, so.
Yeah, I think you bring up an excellent point about fundraising. I don't even think you use the word fundraising, but I'll just use it. So in the third quarter, Republicans in the RNC and Trump raised $125 million. And while this is all going on, there's still, you know, 18, 20 Democrats raising money just for their primary campaign. So it's going to be a huge fundraising advantage. And if the Republicans are smart and they strategically use that in certain parts of the country, I guess initially to define whoever the eventual candidate is, then secondly for get out the vote operations, I think that is going to be a strategic advantage for them in 2020. I mean, $125 million and a quarter, and we're a year out from the presidential race. Those are huge, huge numbers. And let me see here. I'm trying to see if it said – yeah, and maybe combine the Democrats are over $100 million. I'm not real sure, but – Bernie Sanders raised 25.3, Mayor Buttigieg 19.1, and I thought what was real interesting was how little Joe Biden raised. I don't have the exact dollar amount in front of me, but it was a very minuscule amount of money compared to some of his competitors. I think maybe it was about 8 to 10 million or something he raised in the third quarter. So that should pose some additional concern for Democrats that he is not wowing the base. He's, I think, a very boring candidate. He's not as charismatic as he once was. And maybe somebody like a Warren would help them with the fundraising. But, you know, who knows? Because I've read articles that people on Wall Street, maybe some typical Democrat fundraisers, would refuse to give her money just because of her stances on Wall Street in general. So I think the Republicans are going to have a huge fundraising edge over the Democrats. And if they use that money correctly and strategically, which hopefully they will do, it's going to pay major dividends in 2020. Another thing I want to mention, you bring up another good point about, like, if you ask the average person about Trump, and I agree with a lot of what a lot of people say. I don't like a lot of what Trump says. I get that. But I kind of had this epiphany of sorts in the last month. You go back to the George W. Bush, a compassionate conservative, says all the right things. He has a fairly good relationship with some folks in the media. He is as presidential as they come. And the media, especially in that second term for him, completely destroyed him, tore him down, pushed his poll numbers into the upper 20s, I think, in some points, low 30s. So we've gone down that road of a very, very presidential type leader in the White House. And obviously I'd like Trump to be more presidential, but we've gone down that road where Republicans, super nice, saying all the right things, doing what the media wants them to do, and the media turns their back and just rips them a new one anyways. So now we have a president that says stuff, has not afraid to fire back at the media. He's been doing this from day one. And I think I like it because he's a fighter. He's not willing to let the media define who he is and define his administration like they're trying to do. The Democrats are trying to play the playbook that they use on other Republicans in the past, where they could just destroy them with negative story after negative story, and the Republican just whittles away and refuses to respond or fight back. We have a candidate now who's willing to fight back. Yes, he says a lot of dumb stuff in the process, but I think when you get past a lot of that dumb stuff and you go into the core of why he argues what he argues with the media, I don't know. I think it goes a long way, and I think it really is going to help the Republicans in 2020, because like you said, if this was any other Republican, this would be a 45-state landslide. Think Mitt Romney. Loud and clear, I'll say that Mitt Romney, a race that a Republican never should have lost in 2012, he lost. Because –
Oh, sorry. I meant to cut you.
No. I'm done. I'll get off my soapbox.
I'll get on my soapbox, and then I'll say this, and this will be my point about Trump. We all know the personal flaws of Donald J. Trump, right? But the media, the reason why the media is so vituperative, is that the right word, Shanley? Is it vituperative? It towards him, aggressive towards him, is because he and his policies, if he were smart enough to actually enact all his campaign on, is completely antithetical to the worldview of the media, okay? Let's look at the people the media has praised. Ted Kennedy, the lion of the Senate. I remember when Ted Kennedy died, he was hailed as a hero. Ted Kennedy murdered a young girl. Donald Trump never once in his history murdered a young girl. And yet Ted Kennedy, who is a disgusting figure, okay, was hailed as the lion of the Senate. He had prime speaking slots at the Democratic convention. You should read an article. I think it was in the New Yorker. People would say, well, he reformed after he, you know, murdered the girl and lied about it and got away with it because of his famous last name. There's an article, I think it was in the New Yorker, about Chris Dodd and Ted Kennedy, where they would get roarously drunk and about their womanizing D.C. Chris Dodd picked up a waitress, bounced her on his lap, threw her over to Ted. He bounced her on his lap. They would get so drunk they couldn't stand up. They'd go in a limo. They'd go cruising the town. Okay, this is who the media held up as a hero.
Mm-hmm.
Look at somebody like John McCain. There was not a single country he never wanted to invade. Okay, look at somebody like Hillary Clinton. As a result of Hillary Clinton's stewardship of the country as Secretary of State, Libya is now an open air slave market. Right? Like, for all the inept things Donald Trump has said on race, there are more black people enslaved today thanks to Hillary Clinton and Barack Obama's intervention in Libya, which the American media doesn't bring up anymore, and as a result, the American public has consequently forgotten. As a result of the Iraq invasion and war, around 500,000 Iraqis conservatively have died, right? And that country is now a puppet of the Iranians, right? Obama won the Nobel Peace Prize. He expanded war in Libya. He dicked around in Syria. We now are in Syria. I don't remember us ever entering in Syria. I don't remember that coming up for a debate in Congress. In fact, I remember in 2013 when Syria was discussed, Congress voted it down, but somehow we got there in there anyways. My point is the media takes very horrible people who are, because they're polite and then they think Ellen on her TV show, they lionize them as heroes when they've done disgusting things to the world. Donald Trump is a disgusting human being in many respects, but Donald Trump is not willing to expand the overseas wars, right, which I salute him for. And Donald Trump is doing his best to try to rejuvenate the American economy. Under Donald Trump, over the last 2 years, those at the bottom quartile of the income ladder have seen their wages increase at the fastest pace in over 20 years. People who don't have a college degree, don't have a high school education, are seeing their wages go up the best. So that's why I think when people are like, well, Donald Trump is like obnoxious and gross, it's like, I don't give a damn. I really don't give a damn. Bill Clinton probably raped two women, Kathleen Wiley and not Anita Hill. Anita Broderick, I think, or Kathleen Broderick. I can't remember.
There's something Broderick.
Juanita. I think it was Juanita.
Yeah, Juanita. That's it. I've right? seen her tweets before.
And this isn't like right-wing kook, scaremongering, right? This is like you read Michelle Goldberg in the New York Times. She wrote an op-ed about it in 2017 where she's like, I think that if you review the evidence, it's most likely the case that Bill Clinton did, in fact, rape Kathleen. So, again, my point is this. They held up what's that disgusting being? Harvey Weinstein was held up. Like every Democrat has had their picture taken with Harvey Weinstein. They all knew what he was doing. So like, yeah, Donald Trump's a disgusting guy. I get it. Okay. There's been a lot of disgusting people that have been marched through the halls of power. And I really don't care anymore. I really don't care. Donald Trump fights for me. He fights for my interests. So he gets my loyalty.
Yep. Yeah. No. Oh, go ahead.
No, that was it.
Okay. No, and for me, somebody who did not care for Trump, especially during the primaries, I've definitely moved past the stage. Like I don't get involved in all this nonsense about, ooh, this is what Trump tweeted and he said this word and he said that word. Like, who cares? What really matters and what people oftentimes lose focus of are policies and the state of our country. And if you look at the state of our country, I think my biggest complaint about Trump would be about his spending. But outside of that, on foreign policy, on the economy, on Supreme Court picks and judicial picks, I mean, I think it's been a home run. And he's blown through my expectations. And I love the fact that he is not afraid to take on the media. I thoroughly love it. Somebody needed to do it, and hopefully, I'm not overly optimistic about what I'm about to say. Hopefully, future Republicans take note. But as we've seen, there's still plenty of never Trumpers out there. There's plenty of rhinos that want to still play by the old play, and want to play by the rules of the past, and don't want to play by the rules of now. And let's not forget something. There were some the left. They try to make themselves out to be like these saints. They are far from it. There are a lot of they say a lot of vicious things, a lot of hateful stuff. And it's okay for them to say that, but any time a Republican says anything borderline offensive, oh, I can't believe they're a racist, they're this, they're that. But
Oh yeah.
It's very frustrating for
two
me.
Two examples, right? Today there was the testimony of this Vinland guy. And I think somebody on Fox News said something about him, and they said, "How dare you attack a colonel?" Right? He's a colonel in the U.S. military. Yet they smeared Tulsi Gabbard, who is a military veteran, as being a tool of Assad in Russia. Right? Like Hillary Clinton said, "Oh, Tulsi Gabbard's a puppet of the Russians." No, Tulsi Gabbard fought for our country, which is more than you can ever say for Hillary Clinton or Bill, for that matter, or Chelsea. And the other example is, Look what they did to the Covington kids. I could go on a whole 8-series podcast about the Covington kids, where the media deliberately lied about them and threatened violent things against those kids who did nothing wrong. If you watch the video, they did absolutely nothing wrong. The worst thing against them is that one kid did a tomahawk, and then they told him to stop it, and then he stopped it, right? But mm-hmm. those kids out to be like the second coming of the SSS. Or excuse mm-hmm. me, the SS, not the SSS. So the media lies. There are nasty people in power. And you know what? I'm sorry. We're putting our own nasty people in power. That's it. I don't care anymore. I want to win. I don't like losing. I want to win. That's all I care about. I don't like politicians. I get my morals from church. I don't elect politicians to instruct me on morals anymore.
All good points. Let's see. Anything else you want to add on 2020?
I think that's it.
That's good for now. So the last thing we want to talk about, this was a late request about a few minutes before the episode started. One of our listeners really wants to hear, I think it was mainly directed towards Dane, but I guess I'll chime in a little bit, wants to talk briefly about LeBron James and China and the issues with the NBA in Hong Kong. So I'm sure you got a lot to say about that.
Well, I just think it just shows you how cowardly and duplicitous the American establishment is, right? Like, you know, when they pass a pro-life law in Georgia, or when they ban the transgender restrooms in North Carolina, every one of these media stars can, you know, find the time to criticize it, and they opine, and they become experts in local state legislation, even though they don't really know what the bills do. But when it comes time to criticizing what is a dictatorial regime that actively imprisons people, actively enslaves people, is rumored to do organ harvesting, has very low standards of human rights, to put it politely, is belligerent, is militaristic. All of a sudden, because they're making money, they, you know, well, I'm not an expert on Chinese policy. And I just think it's really ironic that these same people who will kneel before the American flag, right, will always stand for the Chinese flag. And I think it's just despicable. I think these people are gross. And I also think it shows that we need to have a much more, you know, this whole idea of the libertarians are wrong, right? The libertarians said free trade with China will lead China to become a democracy like us. And instead, the U.S. is adopting Chinese speech patterns because our capital is heavily entwined in China. And I think we do need to limit investment and trade with the Chinese, because if it means that we're losing freedom of speech through the back door, then it's not worth whatever money we can make. I think that's been – the right wing has been short-sighted in that they place markets above any other sort of agenda or goal. So, but I think this is a big wake-up call. Those are my initial thoughts. I think, you know, F the NBA. They're a bunch of cowards. People should watch the NFL. I mean, you know, just watch college sports if you really want to watch basketball and football. Don't watch these people. They don't like you. They hate you. The people that are playing for most of these teams, to the extent that they think of you, they have nothing but distaste and dislike for you. So why are you going to reward them with your time, attention, and money? That's
mm-hmm. I like what you said about American capitalism or businesses or what have you getting so entrenched in the Chinese culture and their economy and all that, because it's going to be a slippery slope. I mean, think LeBron James, I think he has Space Jam, the movie or remake or something like that. And I think part of why he said what he said is because that movie, I believe, is supposed to debut in China before it debuts in the United States. And there's been other instances of certain movies, I think even like what's the stupid cartoon show on Comedy Central? Yeah. I think they even had something where they were like ripping the Chinese, and then the Chinese government banned it from airing or whatever. It's like you can't say anything negative anymore about the Chinese if you want it to be shown in China. And then but because it's such a huge economy and a huge market, the almighty dollar comes into play. And of course, then we, the Americans, are silenced by it. So, you know, God forbid anybody speak critically of China. And then, you know, I forget LeBron James' exact quote what he said, but it was about as idiotic as they come. And he needs to just stick with basketball. This isn't the first time he's chimed in on some things. And some of these NBA coaches, I believe, I think the coach for San Antonio, the coach for Golden State, they're quick to chime in when it's something to take a shot at President Trump. But when it's something that kind of goes against what they believe in or isn't what they should say, they're all silent about it, or in LeBron James' case, says something very idiotic and uneducated. LeBron, just stick with basketball. You're on the tail end of your career. You know, you probably got another 6-7 years in you, I would say. Just worry about your basketball, and you don't need to chime in about some of this other stuff and make, especially with the way he made it out to be, like he's like some sort of expert, like he's ripping that general manager of the Houston Rockets or whoever said what he said. Like, really? You're gonna rip this guy? Like, you know what you're talking about? You don't know what you're talking about, LeBron.
Yeah, and that's the thing. If they were consistent, I wouldn't mind, right? I don't mind people having opposing viewpoints. That's what makes our democracy great. But they're not consistent. They're cowardly. And there is a clear difference. And the difference is this. If you're willing to speak truth to power, but only when it doesn't cost you a dime, then you're not being consistent and you're not being brave or anything like that. I mean, the fact of the matter is that social conservative, you know, like there's this whole idea that like, oh, America is oppressed by Christianity and all these backward rednecks are just ruling the country and blah, 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 blah. No. Actually, people that are very irreligious and atheists are the ones that have power and influence and positions of control. And so when somebody passes a pro-life bill, it's very easy to come out against them and lobby against them because the people that are pro-life don't have a lot of voices, right? They don't have a lot of money. They have some, but not a lot. But when you come out against, like, the Chinese, all of a sudden it's like, well, I don't know. And the reason why it's, well, I don't know, is because of money. Right? It's a simple issue. These guys are just – they want money. Fine, whatever. You guys have sold yourself out, but just shut up from now on when it comes to talking about politics, because just shut up and dribble at the end of the day, because that's all you really know how to do. That's all you should stick to.
Yeah, I think it's what's going to be fascinating to watch is how what's going to happen next with the NBA, because I don't think this issue is necessarily going away. They have a huge stake in China. It's a huge market for them. It's huge in terms of money. I think I'm looking here on an NBC article. 800 million people in China watch games in 2018-2019 at an estimated value in Chinese dollars of $5 billion. So there's obviously a lot of money on the table, a lot of eyes, huge advertising dollars, all of that. But this Hong Kong thing's not going to necessarily go away anytime soon. And I remember, I think some preseason games, some people wore some shirts that said, you know, free Hong Kong and all this. And the NBA was quick to have some people there say, you can't wear this. Like, this isn't going to be something that's just going to go away. And sooner or later, I think the NBA is going to have to address it in some way. They're going to try to let it go by, and hopefully the media cycle plays out, which it may have over the last week. But all it's going to take is somebody else to say something idiotic or somebody make a big push at some of these arenas, and then there's a big uproar about it where this is going to come right back to the forefront of the news cycle.
What scares me is that there are people that will go to a basketball or football player and rely upon their opinion on anything. Like, to me, these people are specialized in one thing, and that's playing their sport. They do it very well, and I don't grudge them for it. I think that's great. Athleticism is a noble calling, but I don't understand the mentality of it's like, well, if LeBron thinks this, I should think this too. Like, I really don't care what LeBron thinks. I mean, I care to the extent that he can influence other people, but I don't care. Like, I don't understand the idea of people being influenced by sports players. They're sports players, right?
Yeah, exactly. It's like if you really need to get your political beliefs or stances on issues from athletes, Yikes, you need to take some time, maybe stop watching the basketball games and the football games, and maybe start reading the newspaper and educating yourself. You should not be relying on what these athletes say. You think they have a lot of time to research this? No, they're dribbling a basketball, they're doing all what it entails to be a professional athlete. They're not experts when it comes to this stuff. I mean, as it was abundantly clear with LeBron James. I was quite frustrated by the whole thing. I don't know if you there's an interesting sports radio host. I don't know if you ever have seen his stuff, Clay Travis. He's kind of outspoken. He's quick to analyze the media, sports media, and how it's kind of, I don't want to say necessarily like liberalism's gone in the sports media, but he's been quick to call it out, and it was clear with ESPN over the years. There's another online website. It's Deadspin. I think yesterday, whose editor said, if it has nothing to do with sports, you're not allowed to comment on it. Like it seemed as though the media covering politics was filtering its way into the media covering sports, and You don't want that. They need to be completely separate of each other. And unfortunately, it just seemed like they were just – the media was the media, and the sports media was just doing the job the news media does and pushing a certain agenda.
You know, I highly encourage – and I think we should probably be wrapping this up, but
yeah.
People that are listening to this and you're interested in politics, you should read a lot about the Soviet Union and life under the Soviet Union. And you just read about how people lived on a day-to-day basis. And one thing that will really shock you is the communists believed in the politicization of everyday life, right? They were truly totalitarian systems because there was no separation between the political and the personal. And America, unfortunately, is evolving in that direction. Politics is infusing everything. And as somebody that is interested in politics, I really wish it were not. I think that the private realm and, you know, the sports realm and all that should be left off limits, right? These are not inherently political things. And, you know, just what you said about sports becoming so political, I think it speaks to the decline in American society and our increasing Sovietization of our day-to-day lives. And again, if you would read about the Soviet Union, I think people would be really shocked at the similarities.
We'll have to do that. So yeah, that's all we have to talk about on our fifth episode here today. We'll be sure to have another one here in the next couple weeks. Maybe we'll touch a little bit about where this whole impeachment thing goes and anything else that comes up. But I thought this was a good article, commenting on, especially our congressman, or my congressman, that is Tim Ryan, and his poor performance in terms of a presidential campaign. Anything else you want to add before we wrap this up?
No, I want to thank our sponsors, Gobstoppers and Sweet Tarts. If you've got that special sweet tooth and you're looking for something that is gives you just the right amount of crunch, the right amount of sweet, and just a little bit of sour, Sweet Tarts and Gobstoppers are the place you should go. So please buy them now, and every Gobstopper you bite will help support the podcast.
Well, especially with Halloween's right around the corner, I'll make sure this is up before Halloween. So, yeah, absolutely. Get those candies. Yeah, those kids are going to love them.
Yeah.
All right. Yep. So, thank everybody for listening today. And if you have any questions, comments, anything like that, feel free to email them to us, info@mvred.com. Or send them to us on Facebook, or if you have our phone numbers, just text us questions, anything like that. Love the feedback. If you like our episode, continue to rate it highly on Apple and all the other platforms. I think every rating I've seen thus far has been a 5-star, so we got that going for us, Dane.
Wow.
Yeah. And then hopefully we have a lot of new listeners with this episode. And those new listeners, if you enjoy, please spread the word, share it on Facebook. I think a lot of, especially the first half of what we talked about today on a local level, would resonate with a lot of people locally, especially a lot of people who may be more inclined to support Donald Trump. So that's all we have today. Dane, thank you very much. Hope you have a nice Halloween, and we'll be back here in the next couple weeks. Thanks, everyone.
Okay, don't be spooky.
Yeah, take care. Thanks again.